You're listening to the Reef in Focus podcast, produced by the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority.
And this is the first time that the Reef Authority's embarked on such a planning exercise, giving voice to what the traditional owners are looking for and how together we can manage the marine park. It's a really great step in, I guess, honouring and recognising 60,000 plus years of knowledge, experience that our traditional owner partners bring to the table.
Yeah.
G'day everyone, welcome to this edition of the Reef in Focus podcast, coming to you from Woolgaroo Gabar country as always. And in the hot seat today is our GM of Major Projects, Ian Walker. Welcome, Ian.
Thanks, Lincoln, thanks for having me.
Look, we're really looking forward, and we've had this one on the radar for a little while, A, because of the breadth and scale of some of the projects we have underway, not only at the Reef Authority, but with our partners, and B, because a lot of our guests have very intriguing backstories, and you're certainly no exception to that. Can you give our listeners a bit of an overview, I guess, originally, where you come from and how you ended up in North Queensland?
Yeah, thanks, Lincoln. So originally from Geelong, and grew up through the Geelong area, Great Ocean Road, those sort of iconic Australian images of the 12 Apostles. That was sort of my backyard. That connection to nature took me through into university, subsequently working with Parks Victoria. At my first job, for those of interest, was counting kangaroos up in the Mallee, and then subsequently, about 20 years ago, helped set up Victoria's system of marine national parks. So that was the first time anywhere in the world that we'd created a system-wide approach to the establishment of a marine park system.
So you're certainly no stranger to these major planning projects, coming from the area around Bordertown up to tropical North Queensland, but I think we skipped over a very important element of your youth. Is it true that you were a handy AFL player in your younger days?
I did play AFL with Geelong in under-19s and reserves. So spent a bit of time kicking the leather around the field.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing more about
I doubt it.
The career that could have been. And notice we said AFL up here in Townsville rather than
yes,
football.
I appreciate that. And for those people listening, now a dedicated Cowboys follower who are not going terribly well.
Now, as you said, mate, you're certainly no stranger to marine protected areas, not only marine national parks, as we said, but certainly terrestrial areas, basically all around the country. We'd like to know from our guests, can you recall the first time you set eyes on not the Southern Reefs, not the Western Australian Reefs, but the Great Barrier Reef up here in North Queensland?
Certainly can, and that was well before my career here with the Marine Park Authority, one of those iconic destinations that people need to go and see. So, yes, young children out on the reef, out of Cairns, snorkelling there was the first opportunity to see the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park. And like so many people, you know, you fall in love with that sort of experience and that sort of opportunity. An interesting story for you, Lincoln. My youth going across Port Phillip Bay, we saw what I thought was the most humongous hammerhead shark. It was as long as the boat, you know, mind you, I was four or five at the time.
Yep.
But this shark really sparked my interest in nature, and you know, probably at the time I was into dinosaurs and that sort of thing, so it resembled this, you know, prehistoric creature that I just had to know something more about. So it's funny how that history comes back and sort of comes to the table in a different shape or form some years later.
And it seems to be a common theme, in all seriousness, doesn't it, that a lot of our people here at the Reef Authority can recall a pivotal time that they laid eyes on the reef and really decided that that was the direction they're going to go in professionally.
I think so. So many people that are in the environment protected area space have a unique passion and connection that was triggered by something in their youth, and just probably highlights the importance of people getting out into nature and people experiencing what nature has to offer, because you don't know the impacts that that has until later in life, and certainly would encourage so many people to get out, experience what nature has to offer.
Yep.
Not only to look after nature, but it's also really good for your health and well-being, and that's an important ingredient that we at the Reef Authority need to continue to mobilise and get people around.
Yeah. Now, look, mate, as I said, you're no stranger to some of these major projects all over Australia. We're going today to talk about our Southern Plan of Management and break that down a little bit further for our listeners, what it means, who it involves, why we need one, etc. So can we start with what exactly is a plan of management?
Yeah, plans of management are a tool and they're used in protected areas all around the world. And they're a tool that actually helps managers to manage the park and to engage with the community. So they're really a well-referred to, well-documented process. Here at the Great Barrier Reef, it's a statutory tool that sits under our zoning plan. So it gives us clarity about what we will do within the marine park and within the zones that are established in the marine park.
So they're certainly not a new thing for the Great Barrier Reef. We have established plans of management across the marine park to start with.
So they're not new. We do have four plans currently. They're quite small in nature and they're particularly focused on a key issue, so dugong protection in one case, or around a particular high-value site, the Whitsundays is another, or Cairns or others. This plan, though, will be the first time that we've actually looked at all of the values, all of the threats, and come up with a series of management actions or strategies to respond to those threats. The plan is going to occur in the southern Great Barrier Reef from Midge Point south and cover the full extent of that southern area. So this is quite unique for us at the Marine Park Authority. The other really, really important component is that we're doing it jointly with the traditional owners. And this is the first time that the Reef Authorities embarked on such a planning exercise, giving voice to what the traditional owners are looking for and how together we can manage the marine park. It's a really great step in, I guess, honouring and recognising 60,000 plus years of knowledge, experience that our traditional owner partners bring to the table.
Yeah, wow. So we'll get into that a little bit later, particularly on the co-management journey. But in terms of the Southern Great Barrier Reef area, and you touched on other plans, look at species protection and how we use the park, etc. Why do we need one in that southern area and what specifically will it look at?
So we need one in the southern area, firstly, because there isn't one. So this will be the first time we have one there. Being a greenfield location, it means we can start to look at novel and different approaches to how we manage the marine park. So think about the current coral bleaching issues and how a plan of management could help with that. It might define some areas where we have high-value reefs that we want to look after, often referred to as resilient reefs, so they're more resilient to a changing climate. What protection measures can we put around those? That's a simple example of the sort of thing that could occur in a plan of management. We also know in the southern area there's some really unique features that make it particularly exciting to look after and conserve. So those spaces, those areas, we're asking the community at the moment to help us understand what they are and what they value in the area. We also have a high degree of expertise within the Reef Authority that is also going, hey, Ian, look over there. There's a really important particular value that we need to ensure is protected for future generations.
Yeah, okay.
So that's sort of what the plan's all about. It does provide us the opportunity to engage with all of the community. So we're currently engaging with the tourism sector. There are two research facilities in the GBR, one managed by the University of Queensland, one by Sydney University. So there's quite a degree of research activity that's occurring there and we want to tap into that expert knowledge and incorporate that into the plan of management.
Yeah, okay. And can we just delve into that a little bit further? You said that there's existing plans of management coming down essentially to the border of the Southern Great Barrier Reef area. Why isn't there a plan there at the moment? Is it simply a case of moving down the coastline or are the other ones more test cases, if you like? Or?
So this is a new type of plan. So we've looked at those plans and identified where we can improve. So this is a new planning arrangement that will actually do the reverse of what you've said. Once we've demonstrated this is a way of managing into the future, we'll roll out similar planning regimes across the rest of the GBR. So ultimately, we'll have four plans covering the entire length of the GBR to make it clear what occurs where and what activities managers, partners, community can take to look after the values now and into the future.
Yeah, okay. So it's an example of best practice in this new one.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So we look at the zoning plan as our primary management tool, if you like, for protecting and building reef resilience. How does that marry into these plans of management? Does one sit underneath the other?
So the zoning plan coming up to its 20th year anniversary, fantastic foundational piece of work that set the arrangements and the activities that could occur at a large spatial area across the entire GBR. The southern plan of management will look at the southern area and sit underneath the zoning plan and go to further detail and provide management direction about the activities that managers might take to look after particular values. And by values, I mean the ecological values, whether they be the coral reef, the fish, the dugongs, etc., the social values. So what does the community want out of this area, and where do they want to access? What things do they want to see? Where do they want to snorkel? Where do they want to dive? Those are important values, and we have a large social science component within the Reef Authority and a team looking at those sorts of things. And then, of course, there's the economic and commercial values that people and the community derive from the marine park. So whether you're a tourism operator or a fisher, commercial or other use, then those activities we need to balance across the landscape of the Southern Plan of Management.
And you've touched on it a fair bit, I guess. My next question is, who's involved, apart from the Reef Authority, in developing a plan of management? We're out for public consultation at the moment. So can you run through who are we consulting with? Everyone from governments to science agencies to researchers, traditional owners, etc.?
Yeah. So first and foremost, we're in a partnership arrangement with our traditional owner partners. And so we're working with them and can then going out to the community. And by community, I do mean the local community, the international community, but also those people that have an expert knowledge about something in the marine park, whether they're a tour operator, whether they're a commercial fisher, or, you know, deep down into a research project on the GBR. We want to hear from people and we want to hear what they want to have to happen in the marine park. We go through two formal statutory required consultation processes. The first one is, hey, we're just starting, and tell us what you want to know about, what you want us to know about the marine park, what you want to see in the management plan. That's the first stage, and that's where we are right here and now. Yep. So we're out talking to people about what do they want to see happen to the marine park, what do they see as important, and how do they want it looked after. The second formal stage of consultation is when we have a draft plan. We've done all the work, we've written the plan, and we then take that out to the community and say, okay, we've heard what you've said, this is how we've put it into words, now give us your feedback on that. So we have two formal. But during that whole period of time, we'll continue to engage with experts, with different sectors, different organisations about their particular needs or aspirations around the Southern Great Barrier Reef.
And you mentioned it a little bit earlier in our chat, mate. You're certainly no stranger to developing these plans of management or establishing marine park areas. Do you find there's a common theme around establishing these, particularly in public consultation? People might be a little bit afraid that we're closing off their favourite fishing area or something like that, when in reality it's almost the opposite. It's preserving those areas to ensure they can continue to enjoy it and their children, etc. Is that how we approach it?
Yes. Look, I've been involved in many plans of management covering many different areas. So working with the Yindabandi people in northwest WA, with the Gunditj Mara in the southwest of Victoria. Both of those examples, we develop plans of management with the traditional owners. So I bring, I guess, to the table a bit of experience in that context. And you are right. People have a view about public spaces being available to them and have an aversion to government going, hey, we're just going to change some rules here. What I want to stress to people listening and watching this is that this is about government responding to communities' needs, but also ensuring how do we do the best job to conserve the Great Barrier Reef so future generations, your kids, your grandkids, can see, value and love the reef. It becomes really important that we bring the community along with us and not get into a confrontation where we're having an argument over how to best look after the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah. And in terms of doing that, you mentioned before that we have 70-odd traditional owner clan groups spread along the breadth of the marine park and have done so for 60,000-odd years. So it's really a no-brainer, isn't it, that we're partnering or sort of meshing the latest in marine science, et cetera, with traditional knowledge that has maintained that connection over such a long time.
I completely agree. It is a no-brainer. It's great that we're engaging with the traditional owner groups. We've employed some traditional owners to act as coordinators in the consultation process. So they're working with their own communities going, oh, what do you want to see as a First Nations, as a traditional owner in your country here in the Great Barrier Reef? So that's a really powerful step for not only the Reef Authority, but the traditional owners to have a voice, to have a say in how they'd like their country managed into the future.
And having those TO coordinators, it probably opens up, I would imagine, feedback that has maybe never been available to us on how they're connected to country, et cetera. Is that right?
Traditional owners' connection to country is really powerful. And what we want to do is hear from them and capture their stories and for them to be comfortable to share that with us. So building relationship, listening, understanding what they're talking about, and then seeing and putting it into action really will help traditional owners to stay connected to country. I've been in experiences where traditional owners have lost their ability to communicate in language, and so that's really distressing for them because they've lost that ability and that connection to country through story, through song lines, and through those sorts of oral communication mechanisms. So what we're hoping to do is capture some of those stories, those words, that heartfelt message about how to look after country, because as you say, 60,000 years of knowledge here is something we want to build on.
Yep.
And to do that, we need to work closely with the traditional owners.
Yeah, and given that, I guess, the way the GBR Marine Park is managed, it's largely regarded as one of the best managed in the world. And this is essentially another very big step in the right direction, for marine parks all over the world.
It is, and I think, we can continue, and, we've got great support from the traditional owners. I'm very thankful that they've opened up the opportunity for us to engage with them. And it does set a precedent by which others can follow, and the way that we go through the planning process will also show that this isn't hard. We can do it. We just need to be patient, listen, and look for the opportunities that come through this process.
And it must be very exciting. I know you said your remit covers, everything from the redevelopment of our aquarium through to policy and planning. So looking at how we implement this plan of management and the findings that come from public consultation, to be able to transfer that through, as we said, to the other existing plans and move forward that way.
Yeah, look, it sets the plans are really important. So the plan of management, as I said, sits under the zoning plan, but it also informs the permitting and activities that can occur and where they can occur them. So the plan influences our permitting team and makes their job harder for them, or, which we're hoping for, it makes it simpler and easier. So this plan actually tries to deburden all of a significant amount of red tape that exists in our existing policies and permits and those things that set the rules around how government manages the marine park. So we're trying to lift out of that.
Yep.
And be have less burden on community about how, for example, tourism operators can work in the marine park.
Yeah, okay. Can we discuss the nuts and bolts of it a bit more, if you like? You mentioned before it's from Midge Point down to around the Wide Bay. Can we get some geographic locations for those that may be not familiar with the southern GBR area? Where exactly are we looking? From Mackay down, Mackay to Bundaberg?
Yes, fundamentally, so more or less. So Mackay to Bundaberg and out to the full extent of as far out as the marine park goes, as I said, from just south of Midge Point, or north of Mackay, to the bottom of the marine park near Bundaberg.
So with timelines in place, we've mentioned the different stages. What do we end up with at the end of it? when we finally have our southern plan of management, what will it look like?
The plan of management describes the sorts of activities that we want to see happen in the reef, and that might be through some things like reef interventions, it might be controlling cots, and across that large spatial extent, so this southern plan covers 42% of the GBR, so it's no small area, we want to be able to point to particular areas where we want to invest more activity with partners, with community, to look after certain values. Conversely, we also might want to say we want to relieve some pressure from certain areas, say under a coral bleaching event or if there was an oil spill or some incident, we want to say, well, we actually want to make sure we can control and manage that so that we can look after the reef into the future.
A project of this scale and undertaking is obviously no small feat. We know that, for example, when we looked at the zoning plan 20 years ago, it took 2 years of planning and tens of thousands of public submissions. How long has something like this been in the pipeline?
So we identified the need for the development of the Southern Plan. So our first step was actually some early engagement with traditional owners. So we've been in the sort of development, the concepts of it over the last 12 months.
You have mentioned some of the pressures that the reef is facing, not just in the southern area, but certainly over the entire marine park. The benefits of a plan of management are essentially geared towards relieving those pressures.
The benefits of a plan of management are really about identifying what actions government, community, our partners can take to help ensure that the values, the ecological, social, cultural, are there for future generations. So it's about understanding, one, what's there, and then the sorts of actions we can take to better look after the Great Barrier Reef. So it could be everything from, you know, crown of thorns starfish control to bigger education programs to enable people to understand the values of the Great Barrier Reef, or if there are other threats, managing those and responding to those. It might also be about identifying areas where we can undertake reef restoration activities and starting to show on a map where those areas and the focus of that activity should occur. So the benefits are multiple and they cover a whole range of different types of activities and different approaches to look after the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah, and public consultation is sometimes a little bit of a dirty word, but it's literally open to anyone that's a reef user, interested in the preservation, protection, using the reef. We obviously encourage everyone to get involved.
Yeah, so we've got an online tool that people can go on and record and provide us their views, perspectives. You can draw on a map. So typically you'd go to a town hall meeting and draw on the butcher's paper. We've made that into an online digital form, and it means you can go onto our online survey, complete the information, and tell us what you think about the management of the marine park, how we look after it,
yep,
and what sorts of things that you find really important. Because everyone, you know, typically has a great appreciation and a great value associated with the marine park. Tell us what yours are and we can help look after them for the future.
Yep. And all going well, mate, what sort of timeframes would we look at for that? When could we expect to see those stages that you mentioned before come into play and the plan of management essentially established?
Yep. So we're at the starting gate. So we've said to the community, we're starting the plan of management, we're consulting on that. It'll take us about a year before we get to a drafted plan to go out again, and then a period of time after that by which we consolidate people's feedback and take it through to approval from government.
Yeah, okay. And the public consultation phase certainly helps to, solidify from our point of view that the reef really is in everyone's hands, isn't it? Everyone has a role to play in terms of protecting, preserving, and making sure it's there for everyone to enjoy.
The Great Barrier Reef is no different to any other part of our natural cultural environment. Everyone has a part to play. We all have roles in looking after it, from what we flush down the toilet to how we go about undertaking our daily commute to work or around the country. All of those things contribute to looking after the environment, and the Great Barrier Reef is no different. What we can do, though, is we can start to identify with community where they can actively be involved. Please go online. There's a survey. There's an opportunity to tell us in written form, or you can pick up the phone and have a chat with one of our staff about the sorts of things that you think are important.
Very insightful as always, Ian. We appreciate your time and look forward to hearing more about the glory days of the Geelong under-19s down the track.
Thanks, Lincoln. I think we'll give that a miss around the footy. Thank you.
Good on you, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Reef and Focus podcast. If you'd like to hear more, please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform, leave us a rating or review, and visit our website, reefauthority.gov.au, for more Great Barrier Reef content.